public service announcement, sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is O. O. H to the O B. I used to move snowflakes by the O C. I guess even back then you could call me CEO or the ROCO.
Welcome into a special trade deadline edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast. I'm Evan Lazar, joined today by my guy, now writing for the Boston Sports Journal, Miguel Benzon, also known as his Twitter handle, Pat's Cap. Miguel, how are things?
Doing great. Thanks, you. What's going on? Let's get it on. I know, really, we got like, it's a week from today. It's a dread deadline. So it's like, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, the NFL trade deadline is kind of a snooze kind of thing, but the Patriots are one of the few teams who actually do make moves, so maybe they will do it. Maybe they won't, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We'll see what happens.
Right.
They never
But
one thing I love about following the Patriots is that they always are doing something to make their team, to improve their team. That's what I love about them.
Right, exactly. I can set it better. It's one thing that you just love from a team-building perspective is that Bill Belichick is always on the phone. He's always calling around and trying to figure out a way to improve this team. And there are obviously this year, maybe more than in years past, some obvious, you know, needs that they could go after. But before we get into the trade deadline stuff, this is our first show since Sunday night's win over the Falcons. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the game as well. Has the Pats defense turned a corner here, or was this the Falcons offense just being a mess?
That's a mess pod. Okay. I watch the game sometimes with my wife, right? And my wife is not a big football fan, right? And sometimes, and I try to explain to her what's going on. And some of the Atlanta Falcon calls, I couldn't explain why they were doing it. But I do think that, you know, saying, I'm not sure what the Falcons were doing on the field. You got to give credit for what the Patriots defense did. You know what I'm saying? I thought they played. No matter what the play call was, we didn't see the Patriots defense going running around. Like, I don't know where they were communicating with each other. They weren't running around. There were no Falcons getting wide open. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, my joke on Twitter is that Chris Hogan has a little busy cook. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes I thought that when he gave it over to some opposing players. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a good comparison, actually.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like you were doing in your thread, your weekly thread, it seemed like, you know, the Patriots had learned something from the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Like, Brady was, you know, they were getting the ball out quick. So he was getting jacked up in the middle, you know, like he was during the Super Bowl. I thought it was easily, I mean, everybody listening to this knows that easily the best game of the year. And, you know, like I said on Twitter, I was joking around with my wife. Wife always kids me around saying that they're still going to the Super Bowl. I still say they're going to the Super Bowl. I still think they're going to win it. I mean, you know, I don't get, like, one of the best things about this win for me is I get to stop reading these off-season review things. You know what I'm saying? If I had the time, I'd get really busy at work. I would write an article saying, using hindsight on these hindsight articles.
I think that the point about them learning from the Super Bowl is really true. They just weren't, especially when they had the ball in offense, they were not going to let the Falcons twist and stunt in defensive line movement that really gave the Patriots fits in the Super Bowl. They just weren't going to let it have the time to get home this time around. And Brady just was getting the ball out in about 2.3 seconds, 2.4 seconds on every drop back. And it was quick hit throws and then the occasional hang on to the ball for a deep shot to Gronk or Cooks or something like that. And they really leaned on the running game. And I talked about this last week. And I really think that that is what this team should look like with the players that they have on offense. It should, you know, rely heavily on the run game to move the chains and then hit big plays with Cooks and Gronk and some of the outside receivers that they have that have some speed. And that is exactly what this game plan was. Obviously, you'd like to see them finish in the red zone a little bit better than they did, 2 for 5 in the red zone. You don't like that. But overall, they really didn't need to put up 30, 35 points in this game to win, obviously. So, you know, the way that the game script went, you kind of understood some of the conservativeness on offense. And defensively, you know, what can you say? I mean, Johnson Batamosi has really come in here and just been incredible. Really taking that second corner spot by storm. And, you know, you don't want to start to get into, well, should he play over Gilmore? And I know a lot of Patriots fans are going to go there, especially if Gilmore comes back from this concussion and has a rough game or has a rough moment even in that game where he blows another coverage or something like that. You know it's coming. Right, that, you know, Johnson Batamosi does his job. He's you know, listens to the coaching. He does his plays his role a lot along the lines, the same lines as Logan Ryan. Not as talented, I don't think, even as Logan Ryan, but still one of those players that is just going to play a role in the defense instead of trying to be the guy, the shutdown guy, like they kind of brought Gilmore in here to be. But to put up that type of performance in the coverage in the secondary is just incredible because they really weren't rushing the passer. Matt Ryan really had all day to throw.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of 3- and 4-man rushes, not a lot of blitzing. And even still, the coverage was just exceptional. From what I could see, the second half of this game, the all 22 is about covered in a whole lot of fog. But from what you can see, it is especially in the first half, first three quarters or so, was really, really tight coverage across the board from the Patriots. And it was interesting to see the Falcons, the matchups that they picked, I really thought. Was bizarre, but more so maybe even than the play calling, was just the fact that they really attacked Patrick Chung, Malcolm Butler, Batamosi, guys that the Patriots have that are good at covering guys. The strength of this team defensively has been the secondary and the safety play especially, and that, you know, is basically going right into the teeth of the defense, so to speak, is to try to attack that those players in the secondary instead of going after a guy like a Jonathan Jones or a Kyle Van Noy in coverage or Cassius Marsh the few times he goes out in coverage. They really didn't try to do that at all. They tried to beat the Patriots with Julio and Mosanu and Justin Hardy and those guys, and it just wasn't going to happen. The Patriots game plan, a lot of 2-deep coverages, a lot of safeties rolling over the top of Falcon receivers. They just weren't going to let them beat them on those types of throws, and that's really what it came down to. I think we'll get into this, you know, with the trade deadline talk. The pass rush is still abysmal, really. It just was non-existent, and they really didn't try to bring much pressure either, mainly containing Ryan in the pocket and giving them rushing about 3 or 4 guys a time. I hate the 3-man rushes, Miguel. I just hate it. I wish we could toss it away. It's just what is it doing? You know, what's it achieving? You're not going to get to the quarterback like that, especially when you don't have a guy like a Von Miller or something like that that's going to just beat a tackle, you know. And if they don't do some more disguising and stuff like that, then this is just going to be the season for this, you know, pass rush. But the run defense, much better too. But let's get into why I called you, the Cap Wizard, to come on the show tonight. And the NFL trade deadline, as you mentioned earlier, is a week away, Halloween this year, yes. October 31st at 4 p.m. Eastern, correct, is the
deadline,
I believe.
Yes, the second – it's Tuesday after week 8. It used to be week 6. They moved it back, in my opinion, and move it a little bit further along, but hey, well, that's not going to happen right now. So basically, let's just go over to some questions people ask me on Twitter.
Yeah.
Patriots is about $5 million in cap space, all right? And so if you wanted to trade, and basically I just got a little article, it's on Boston Sports Journal, how the Patriots would fit a player on the salary cap. You know what I'm saying? I just basically broke it down to 3 tiers. You know what I'm saying? if the player's going to have a cap with the Patriots, okay, of less than $2 million, the Patriots can take that player on without doing anything, okay? And what I say by $2 million, the player's going to they pay for a player tomorrow, all right? They have to pay 11 weeks' salary for that player. You know what I'm saying? So if you read the player has, his salary is I'm just making it simple. It's like $1.7 million. He's going to get paid for the Patriots $100,000 a game or $1.1 million. The Patriots can definitely easily take that on without doing a thing with their cap, all right? Because remember, if you're trading for a player, you have to make room. Also, you got to make room for a player. So a player's got to have to go. You know what I'm saying? So if they make room, but they can make room for a player on the 50-million roster by either placing a player on IR or NFI or even waiving a player or even trading a current Patriot player, all right? So that, so they do, they waive a player, you're not paying that player 11 weeks salary. You know what I'm saying? So you can kind of save money that way. Going back to the three-tier talk, a cap hit with the Patriots less than $2 million, Patriots can afford it without doing anything. Now it gets kind of tricky if you're going to be $2 to $5 million, all right? And depending on, especially if it's a person who has a player, or a person who has 46 man active roster bonuses, and depending on what the Patriots and how healthy the Patriots remain the rest of the season, right? I'm saying if the person's going to have a cap hit with the Patriots between 2 to 5, the Patriots are going to have to do something to create cap space, okay? And there's, like I said before, there's different ways of doing that, you know what I'm saying? Like they could put waive a player, trade a player, or like in a talking about an article, reach a deal with some of these players to convert salaries into signing bonus, or even extend a couple of players who have high cap numbers. I don't think that's going to happen, but they could do it. All right. And then we're talking about the big numbers, like players who would have a cap with the Patriots, like over $5 million. You know what I'm saying? Like we talked about you had mentioned in a DM to me, like Joe Staley. You know what I'm saying? Joe Staley, in my opinion, for them to afford to take on a cap hit like Joe Staley, they would have to probably trade a player to the 49ers. Maybe, right. You know what I'm saying? So the difference, so now you're just paying the difference between Joe Staley's salary and the current Patriots' salary. You know what I'm saying? So that'll help, you know what I'm saying? So maybe like a Cam Fleming or, I had said in an article, and then I started this article early September, you know what I'm saying? I started thinking about when I'm on my lawn. So I had mentioned like maybe a Malcolm Butler, you know what I'm saying? But now, if somebody had asked me in a DM to think that Malcolm Butler was going to get traded, I'm like, come on, they can't afford to trade him. If they get Rowan and Gilmore, or they can afford to trade him now, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Oh, yeah, no, he's off the block. I mean, that's like one name that we were thinking about, obviously, kind of a la Jamie Collins. If Malcolm Butler, and he hasn't been stellar, if he had, kind of a slow start to the season, could he get shipped off like Jamie Collins? I think we're both in agreement here that it's just not possible with the depth chart at corner that they have right now.
No, because if anybody's listening to me, I'm a big Malcolm Butler fan, so I tend not to show my bias for those things, but I just don't see it happen. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm a big Malcolm Butler fan as well. I think that if Gilmore and Rowe were healthier and playing better, and Butler was playing the way that he's playing right now, then maybe it would happen. Maybe it could have happened. Like back, if you had asked me right after the KC game, during the New Orleans game, where he basically got benched to start the second half, maybe we're having a different conversation. Let me ask you about another guy, and obviously thoughts and prayers with this player, with Harvey Lange. But I think that a lot of people are wondering why Harvey Lange is still on the active roster. And I guess my question to you is what's your theory on that? And also, where could they put Lange, NFI, IR, and would that save them any room in cap?
Okay. So Okay, let's get, you asked like four questions. Let me just do them off the top of my head. Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
Why they haven't been? They haven't done anything with them. And it kind of answers my answer. It kind of ties into all these other things, right? Because remember, let's go backwards. Let's remember Tony Garcia. Tony Garcia is on the NFI list, all right? Well, what happened, and we don't know what illness he has, all right? So, but when he went on the NFI list, his salary went down from $465,000 to $348,000, okay? So now you got Lange, who got in that car accident, all right? So my theory is why they haven't done anything is so the Patriots kind of set a precedent. So when Lange, when they eventually going to put Lange on NFI, they're going to eventually lower his salary. I think they can just wait. So I think they're going to wait till the longer they do it, the less salary he loses. So until they need to, they won't. All right? Because his salary is going to go down. And I think there's going to be bad people that are saying, well, how would you get lower his salary when the guy is because he was in a car accident?
Right.
But that's what they do when it's in their contracts. That's when they do, but when the player is going on IR, you know what I'm saying? Or now in this case, NFI. And I hate to say this, but Lane was undrafted. Garcia was drafted. I don't know how you can go and then say to Garcia, well, we're a little young guy, but we're going to leave Lange's salary alone because he was in a car accident. Because we don't know the difference. We don't know what Garcia's illness is.
He could have something serious. You don't want to theorize what it is, but something serious.
Yeah, he could have something serious, but it's not public.
Right.
Okay? So we can't say, he might have something serious, but they still lower the salary. Or he might, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think with the precedent, they kind of, the Patriots, going to have to go, if they want to keep following the precedent, is lower his salary. And Lange say, I don't know when that's going to happen. I check the transaction-wise, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's going to happen. I don't know when. So, you know what I'm saying? And then he'll lose some money when he's on NFI. I mean, like, so every week he's on the 53 man roster, he's getting paid like a rookie at $465,000. Once he goes to NFI, he's going to get him cut in pay. That's what's going to, somebody asking about NFI and IR, and somebody asked me this on Twitter, what's the difference? As well, cap-wise, it doesn't mean a thing. Cap-wise doesn't mean a thing. When you're on NFI, teams are not obligated to pay you anything. The Patriots didn't have to pay that fear a thing. They don't have to pay if they put Lange on NFI. They don't have to pay a thing. But if you do pay a player, it does count against the cap.
Right.
What's going to happen is the negative nannies, the media is going to hammer the Patriots for saying how you load a guy's salary, you know what I'm saying, after he got in a car accident. And I'm going to say to them, the Patriots are not obligated to pay him anything per the rules. They're still paying him and things, you know what I'm saying? And they had a set of precedent. They really can't treat one player different than the other. You know what I'm saying?
That's okay. And I think that, obviously it's sympathetic to the situation, but obviously also, this is the NFL. Guys get cut every single day. Guys get cut that were draft picks, that weren't draft picks, that were big money free agents. I mean, Byron Maxwell just got cut by the Dolphins today, and I understand that this situation is different than every situation is different. But at the same time, this league is cutthroat. Like, this has nothing to do with, unfortunately, this car accident has put Lange in a position where he can't be on the field. And that in itself, especially for an undrafted player, is a tough spot to be in. That is a tough spot to be in, whether you get, in a car accident or you get injured on the field. Either way, when you're an undrafted rookie free agent in your rookie season, if you are not able to be on the field or to play in a game, then your stock is just going way down. I mean, there's no there's no chance for you really. And obviously it's you know, the Patriots are trying their best, I think, to do the right thing with Lange, given that the situation is a little different than poor performance or something like that. But at the same time, you know, if they want to make a trade here, the reason why I asked you this question is because, you know, if they want to make a trade here and that's going to save them a little bit of cap space to bring in someone, then, you know, you got to do it.
Yeah, it's not going to save them much. You know what I'm saying? Cause but it's going to save them some cap space. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't save them much, but it's going to save them some. But I don't see how they not do it after they lowered Garcia's salary. I mean, So unless they go and say, well, we'll just go increase Cassie's salary back to the rookie salary. See, because when Brissett was on IR last year?
Yeah.
His salary, when he was on IR, his salary was lowered.
Right.
And then when it came back, it was back increased.
Right. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned it a little bit, but let's talk about maybe the guys that the Patriots might be looking to ship out of town to maybe either move in a player-for-player swap or to create some cap space. You mentioned one guy, and I had another one for you, but Cam Fleming was the guy that you mentioned who seems like a viable option, probably could play at least as a third tackle elsewhere, isn't active on a weekly basis in New England. I like that idea.
You know, in the beginning of the year, he was active and Waddle wasn't. Now Waddle's active and Fleming isn't. They've had Cole Cronston on. I hope I pronounced the last name correctly. He's been inactive every game. You know what I'm saying? So I think
he
was like
Adrian Waddle 2 years ago. Was it two years ago or 1 year ago where Adrian Waddle is inactive for every game?
Last year. He was only active for two games last year. So I think they like Waddle over actions saying they like Waddle over Fleming, recent actions. And I think they like, you know, Cole Crossman, right, for the future. Okay. Because for example, for people listening to this, none of their tackles besides Cannon and Crossman are signed past this year. Solder isn't, Fleming isn't, Waddle isn't. So they need somebody for the future. I mean, besides Garcia. No one knows what his illness is. We don't know if he's going to be healthy for next year. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you got three veteran tackles who are not signed for next year. And I think that Fleming, because, as you said several times on Twitter, I mean, the O-line depth in this league is just horrendous. I think that somebody would want to get him. A team might need him to be their swing tackle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that he's a guy that plays much better, in my opinion, as the swing tackle than he does. I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing Waddle play over him and get more, be on the active roster for game day more, is because in an emergency, if Solder or Cannon were to go out with an injury, I think the ceiling on Waddle in terms of having him be one of the five guys that plays every down is higher than it is with Cannon. You know, Cannon has been a serviceable swing tackle. I think they like Waddle a little bit better, especially on the left side. If, you know, Solder were to go down with an injury in game, and you have to play a guy, you know, for the rest of the game at left tackle or for the rest of the game at right tackle, I think that they like Waddle to do that a little bit better than Fleming.
Yeah.
Right. And Fleming is more of a guy that they just see as a depth piece that could be a swing tackle, tackle eligible, 6-0 line, that type of stuff. Another name I wanted to throw at you, and I think it was Doug Kide Nesson that threw this out before first, but Rex Burkhead, who is back from injury in this game, showed some stuff against the Falcons.
So Andy Hyde and Deion Lewis have made up, and we're not trading him.
Yeah, you're right. So Deion Lewis all of a sudden is the guy in the Patriots backfield. Well, if there is a guy, I mean, everybody touches the ball. But
Rex would say, oh, man. Here's the thing about trading. Oh, man. See, because both him and Lewis are not signing for next year. So, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I thought Lewis's deal, his current deal, was I usually don't, like, you players sign the deals, I'm thinking, man, okay, that's your money. You do what you want to do, right? I mean, like, man, I usually don't. But I would not have signed that deal. I thought it was just so favored to the Patriots, and he was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just worked out for him that he got injured right afterwards. But I still thought if he played, like, if he was had healthy, his current deal was going to be weighed on the page, all right? It just worked out for him, like, so he came to the kids right after he got hurt, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, man. But the other thing is that Bowman, you know what I'm saying, what do you – I mean – I thought that Burkett might take some of his ST snaps from Bolden, and Bolden's not signed for next year. So what do you? So I mean, I you know, so I thought like Burkett could be like the four down kind of guy. So he is a possibility, especially if you do love Deion Lewis, who is so lovely to watch. On the I love watching that guy.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Oh my God! All right, yeah, he's one. Like, see, he would create cap space for the Patriots. So if they another team, like, simple, if you want to get a guy with a huge cap number, somebody like, a Marcel Darius, you mentioned him, or Joe Staley. I mentioned in my article Joe Thomas, but then of course he got Joe Thomas got hurt. Those guys,
I would love that so much if Joe Thomas just found his way to the Patriots, man.
Yeah,
that
but now he got hurt. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But those, you know, those, if you wanted somebody a player with a big cap number, you know, I said you would have to take on, they would have traded the current Patriot player. And I'm like thinking who they could trade, you know, saying that, you know, saying, I was going to say it could be, you know, Burkett was going to be one, Simon's going to be one. Malcolm before the injuries could have been one. You're saying, I doubt it would have been. You know, I doubt. You know, when Gisley, you know, Mike Gisley, guy you want to trade, blah blah blah. You know, what I'm saying, those guys with the low numbers, maybe one in that $1 to $3 million cap range. Saying those are the kind of players you're looking at. You know, what I'm saying, and then other people had asked me about Jimmy G. You know,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But Jimmy, whatever. I just don't think that's going to happen. Because you don't even have a backup. They don't have a third quarterback. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the thing about when the Jimmy G trade talk started in the beginning of the season again about how maybe they should trade Jimmy for a pass rusher, a big-time pass rusher. It just completely ignores the fact that they don't have a backup quarterback on the roster if they trade Jimmy.
Yeah.
Who are they going to do? Are they going to sign Colin Kaepernick off the street or
the guy from the practice squad that they cut, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. After
2 weeks.
Especially, I mean, like, obviously we all know Tom Brady's 40 years old. So you throw that in the equation. But you especially more so than even Brady's age, you throw in look at the landscape of the entire NFL right now and look at how many teams are down their starting quarterbacks and what the effect is on that team because their backup is so much worse than the starter. You know, the Packers, the Colts, you know, Marcus Mariota in Tennessee when he was injured, Derek Carr in Oakland when he was injured. You know, there's a lot of injuries that you can just point to and say, you know, because the Packers are going from Aaron Rodgers to Brett Hundley instead of Aaron Rodgers to Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, their season's over. Their season's over. You know, they're not going to make the playoffs, most likely. And their season's over, and now they're put in a bind where if they do somehow make a run with Brett Hundley, the answer is to, like, inject as much stem cells as possible into Rodgers' collarbone to try to get him back for January, which is just not a situation you want to be in either. You know, when you have your franchise like that, you know, you want him to take the time to heal properly and all that stuff. So I think that, when you look across the league, I mean, Carson Palmer just went down. There's so many guys that are going down left and right, and now you want to trade your security blanket behind Brady, who we know can at least come into this offense and do some stuff and be dangerous and make the throws necessary and probably get this team to still, you know, 11 or so wins, especially seeing that they already have five.
Yeah, really, because all you probably need is 11 to get in.
Right, especially to win the AFC East. I mean, obviously the AFC East is much better than we thought, but I think a lot of that Miami record and that Jets record is a little bit of a facade, you know, not necessarily indicative of how good of a team or how talented of a team those teams are. Buffalo, I think, is pretty good. But overall, I think that that's really just out of the picture. But let's go through some of these names that I threw at you in our DM, and I'll just throw them at you, and tell me if I'm absolutely crazy or if it's just not possible with the cap or if you like it. And I will admit, just the caveat off the top here, I like wild trades. I like them especially with the Patriots because I know that Belichick is not gun-shy by any means. So I know that some of these are kind of pipe dreams. Let's start with one that I think that isn't necessarily from a Patriots perspective, but I was just curious to hear your take on Steelers wide receiver Martavis Bryant, who by Tomlin said today that they're not trading him, but you know, who knows if that's really true.
Heck to the no. No way. No way. Okay, I'll say – heck gonna know, like, roster-wise, personality-wise, cap-wise, that's easy. You know what I'm saying? Because he's on his rookie deal, real slow salary. The Patriots could take him on, no problem, and just move, you know, but heck gonna know roster-wise. Okay.
Right. I think it's pretty unbelievable, and we won't get too long on Martavis, but I think it's pretty unbelievable that this guy who was suspended for an entire year of the season and the Steelers stayed through, you know, with this guy for years, year after year, where he's just, you know, messing up off the field, getting into stuff that gets him suspended and stuff like that. And the Steelers were just like, you know what, just get healthy, get right, and come back to us next year. And then now that he's not getting his targets, he's not getting his touches, Martavis Bryant is unhappy. And, you know, it's unbelievable to me that a guy that went through what he went through with an organization and the Steelers stuck by him, both because of his talent and because of the type of organization that they are, and now all of a sudden he wants out. That's indicative, I think, a lot of that entire locker room, though. I've always thought that the Steelers, especially under Tomlin, have been a little bit of loose cannons. And kind of guys that were a little bit selfish and did what they wanted. Antonio Brown, one of those guys. Big Ben is certainly one of those guys. Le'Veon holding out, although I understood why he held out. That entire thing was, you know, kind of for selfish reasons at the end of the day.
He didn't really held out. He didn't sign a contract. Let's be real. He didn't sign a contract. So, he was franchise tagged. He didn't, you know what I'm saying? He had the right, since he didn't sign a contract, he was not obligated to show up.
Right,
so let's be fair to the man. He didn't hold out.
Okay, not a holdout. And I do understand why he did that. But overall, I just think that's something that the Steelers organization as a whole.
If I was a franchise tag player, I probably wouldn't show up to the last minute either. It's no benefit for them.
So yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because they're not going to lose. If you're them, you know, training camp, you're not going to really miss much. You know what I'm saying? Especially a running back, you know what I'm saying? I understand why he's doing so, but that's like an off-season thing, me and franchise guys play. Okay.
Yeah. On the other hand, you know, it really took to him until the last couple weeks to get rolling because he missed so much training camp that he wasn't really 100% in shape when
Steelers.
He showed up. And
yeah,
right.
The Steelers, they should have made it worth his while.
Yeah, they should have made it a fair offer. They're very true. All right, let's go to the next one here, and I'm gonna save the two I like the best for last. We talked about it a little bit, but Joe Staley from the 49ers. Maybe the 49ers decide that they want to sell everybody with the record that they have, and they sell some more of those veteran players. I know Carlos Hyde, the Patriots, not really interested in a running back, but might be on the trade block too. Joe Staley, veteran guard who can play tackle if possible, and maybe the only weak link in this offensive line. All of a sudden, this Patriots offensive line looks really good, but Nate Solder obviously is struggling a little bit. So Joe Staley.
Yeah.
Is that totally out of the realm of possibility there?
No, it's not. They would have to trade a player. They would have to trade a player because his remaining cap number is higher than what they have right now. But they would have to trade a player. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But they could do it, but they would have to trade a player. Plus, you know, they might have to do with another player what Tom Brady did when the Patriots took on Randy Moss. You know what I'm saying? like Brady agreed to convert salary into signing bonus, and then they were able to take on Randy Moss's deal, and then do something with Randy Moss. You see? So, but it's Joe Philly is about the high range of where the Patriots could do something and still not really adversely affect the 2018 and 2019 cap numbers. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
He's at the high range, but that's about, you know, saying, he would be, you know, and the funny thing is he gets cheap, you know, because he plays, you know, he has a high salary, he becomes cheaper to acquire if he's waited one more week. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, you said it earlier, but moving the trade deadline back, I thought it was a couple weeks ago. I was going to call you a couple weeks ago and tell you to come on for a trade deadline podcast and realize that it wasn't until the end of the month. But
no, it was they moved it from week 6 to week 8 a couple years
right.
ago. And now I can't even remember what year. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I actually really like it like this, and I agree with you that maybe it could even be pushed back even further to closer to Thanksgiving.
Yes.
This is when, you know, teams really, the injuries start to happen and you start to kind of take shape as a team and you kind of get to see your flaws. And teams that are, you know, smart enough and aggressive enough to make some of these trades, like the Patriots, like the, you know, a couple of the other teams as well, this is really the time of year where you can kind of really tell what you have and where a guy could come in and fill a role or fill a need that would really take your team from, you know, one level to the next level, or even just fill, you know, stop the river from pouring or something like that if you have a clear weakness. But let's go to the next one here, kind of similar along the lines of Joe Staley cap-wise, but Marcel Darius in Buffalo sounds like he is unhappy with the situation with the Bills and a lot of rumors surrounding him. Big cap number, I know, but a player that could come in and be a wreck on that defensive line.
Yeah, the problem with him is not his – he, like I said, he'd be on the high right, – him and Joe Staley is above the high range. The problem with him is his 2018 numbers. Because his salary is fully guaranteed. He's got like $7 million fully guaranteed.
Yeah.
So he has like, yeah, so which is means like, so you take it on and he has no reason to agree to redo his deal unless you give him $7 million. You know what I'm saying? Because his contract is through the 2021 season. I cannot see that he's going to agree to, you know, maybe he'll agree to lower his deal. I can't see him agreeing to take not get at least $7 million on a deal. Either a signing bonus or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So like, he's definitely going to get, you know, that's what you're looking at. You're committing to paying the rest of his salary. He's got a high salary for this year. And then the $7 million you guys, that's all. That's you committing to $13 million for at least for him for the next 2 years.
Right, you know, that's something that some people that would say, you know, that the NFL salary cap doesn't exist, which is obviously bogus. That is something that they don't look at. It's like, okay, you know, this guy's making this much money this year, and they say, oh, well, that's affordable. It's, well, how much money does he have left on his contract? How much guaranteed money does he have left on his contract? You know, you got to look at it from a 3 to 5 year window, as well as looking at it from making the team better right now. And that's something that Belichick does, you know, obviously at a very high level. And, you know, that's the type of thinking that he is doing, is not only, you know, does this guy help our team right this very second, but also, you know, what does this mean going forward? And I think we all agree that if Marcel Darius' $7 million in 2018 gets in the way of them re-signing some of their own free agents, then maybe, you know, it's not worth it for him, even though he's a really good player. Let's move on to another one here, and I'll get to the two pass rushers I wrote down last. So I'll start with this one as one of my personal pipe dreams, and that's Jarvis Landry. I know you've seen me talk about this on Twitter, I'm sure, about getting Landry on this team. I just would love to see him in this offense, especially with the possession, you know, the missing ingredient of the possession receiver that is Julian Edelman in the middle of that Patriots offense. Landry is the type of guy that maybe is one of two or three other guys in the league that can say they're as good in the slot as Julian Edelman is.
Okay. Cap-wise, it's not a problem. I just don't see the Dolphins trading him for the division rival. And I don't think it, especially if you, like you're saying, a second round. I cannot, like, if you're telling me that he's worth a second round, then somebody else who's going to have a higher draft pick, because the Patriots would be in the 60s, I think somebody in the 30, in a high 30, in the 30s or in the 40s will trade to also give up a second round. That's why I just don't see it happening. The same, because that's what they would have. Is he going to get, if he signs, he leaves, signs a big contract, he's going to get a third round compensatory pick for him. So they need to get at least a third or a second for him this year. And I just think there's going to be another team that's going to outbid him. I'm not saying it doesn't make sense for the Patriots. I think they're going to get outbid. I'll be shocked.
Yeah, I would be shocked too. That's just one that I was, even with Julian Edelman coming back next year, if Jarvis Landry was on this team long term, I'd be all for it. You know,
wow.
I think that he's one of those guys that is really, really good at being a slot receiver. And I sometimes gets like thrown in there as like, you know, well, he's not as good as a guy like a Julio Jones or an AJ Green, which is true. I mean, he's not that type of talent, but at the same time, you know, he's really, really good at what he does well. He's really good at playing in the slot. He's really good after the catch, you know, stuff like that. He's one of the best guys in the league with the ball in his hands after the catch. That just like spews fit in the Patriots offense, right? You know, guy that can play in the slot, guy that can run after the catch, you know, guy that's shifty, you know, all that type of stuff is just, you know, total Patriots all the way through. But let's move on to the next one here. We just saw him a little bit, but he's not really playing much in Atlanta, and that's Falcons edge rusher Brooks Reed, who is one of those guys that's just like a high motor dude that can get after the quarterback, has some pass rushing skills, but at the same time isn't really part of the rotation right now in Atlanta, and maybe, you know, could be available.
Yeah, it's doable, and I don't think that he's at the for the rest of his salary, we would take it on. It would be about $2.4 million, which is right. That would leave, you know, I think that's doable. I mean, they've had end of the years. Recently, you know, usually at end of the year with around $5 million in cash space, but they've usually had with $1 million. You know, so they can do it. They could definitely do that. If they if they did take on Brooks Reed, I don't think they're extending someone else this year. You know what I'm saying? I still think one of the things I think they're leaving to having the $5 million in cash space is that I do think they want to extend a lower-level player, maybe like a, you know, Adamosi, or I was always going with Brandon King, but I just don't see it happening now. If I was going to change my thing, Adamosi would be one more likely choice.
I think Adamosi, man, I mean, he's come in and he's going to play more on special teams as soon as Gilmore and Rowe gets back, and then all of a sudden you've got Jonathan Jones, Slater, Adamosi. You know, you're really talking about some really good special teams guys that can really, you know, cover on kicks and punts and stuff like that. It's going to be crazy when those three guys are out there on punts at the same time.
That's funny because the coverage team has been really good. I'm saying,
yeah.
So, Adamosi, Ebner, Slater all have Pro Bowl bonuses. And I think, you know, saying, I think, I like his chances, Padamosi's chances of getting it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
From the first couple of weeks, I forgot to look up if his special team staff has gone down the last couple of weeks.
They've been playing Jonathan Jones more on special teams and Padamosi a lot less since he had corner.
So if he keeps on playing corner, then he's not going to get that boo-boo bonus.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Little geek thing is like my, Kyle Arrington had like a $500,000 Pro Bowl bonus, and I always thought that was the weirdest incentive the Patriots had. A player would never get that on the Patriots, you know what I'm saying? Padamosi's got like an incentive for 4 interceptions. I'm like, what? Why would you, you know what I'm saying? That's crazy. And he actually might have, you know, see what happens. He might actually get a chance to get that.
Yeah, some of the incentives that you mentioned and just you see are just crazy. Like, you know, Padamosi play Pro Bowl. Like, I guess if he made the Pro Bowl as a special teamer, that's one thing. But four INTs, that's even with all this more, you know, playing time on defense, that's not happening. But all right, last one here. Similar, you know, build as Brooks Reed, similar style. Alohi Kikaka on the New Orleans Saints, who I really love and has played a lot less in New Orleans over the last couple of weeks, especially, you know, recently with that defense turning. And he's a rotational guy now there, and he's been part of some rumors as well.
Yes, and he the Panthers could easily could take him on, no problem. He's on his rookie deal, signed through 2018, perfect deal. You know what I'm saying? They could just take it easy because he's got a really slow salary number. I'm saying, so it's they didn't have to do anything. It's not even a problem cap-wise. And it's, you said rumors. Like, I know, I just read on NFL.com, his name was on there because I guess he, the guy who wrote from NFL.com, read an article from Nesson. Oh, man, I'm not sure what Zach or Doug wrote it. I'm sorry. It was on Nesson.com, but I don't know. One of those guys wrote a trade article and mentioned this guy's name. And I know that I think the guy who wrote, wrote a trade article today of all gone fixed. Sorry. And I can't remember if it was Doug, Zach, or Doug. And they're going to kill me. That's all right.
Yeah, they'll let you live, I think.
Okay.
But, yeah, he's a guy that is, that you know, basically my idea here with some of these is mainly to get Cassius Marsh off the field as much as possible. And I'm just going to throw Cassius right under the bus. I think he tries very, very hard on the football field. He's very, very hard. A guy that has a high motor, that's always playing hard. But man, in terms of actual, just football talent, the fact that that guy's playing 75% of the snaps on defense over the last couple of weeks is really troubling to me.
Don't you think he's going to go down as half sticks more?
Harris could, and obviously.
And then when Shea comes back,
Shea's the big one. I think, Shea, maybe we're overhyping his return a little bit based off of what he played like last year. But just where this defense is right now in terms of who they have at outside linebacker and edge rusher, to play a guy like Shea McClellan over Cassius Marsh, I think is a slight upgrade. Neither guy is great. Better. Yeah, exactly. Cassius Marsh is just one of those guys that, the Patriots identified, right off the bat of the season, right at training camp, and the training camp that they needed another body on the edge. I don't think that they ever imagined that he'd be playing this much. Now that he's playing this much, you see just the pass rush just really lacks something when he's out there, both in terms of containing quarterbacks in the pocket. I mean, he's constantly just running right by quarterbacks. He did it again a couple of times against Atlanta. Yeah, and he's just running right by guys. I think Kikaha and Reed are both guys that could come in here and be a lot more productive rushing the passer than Cassius Marsh. So that's kind of
You know what I'm saying? And you could say, for example, if you were to get the guy from the Saints and then you waive Marsh, it's very little cap.
That's right.
Takes up very little cap space.
You hate to really rag on a player like I just did with Marsh, but it's just what it is. You watch the tape, and I had said some stuff about Nate Solder, and people were like, well, his kid has cancer. Like, this is not anything to do with these people as people. Like, my analysis of them on the football field is, football.
Oh, my God, I know. I wanted to say something about Lange, like how the Patriots could probably cut his salary
right
on Twitter, but I did not want to even deal with how could you say that? I mean, I didn't want to even deal
with it. Right, but at the end of the day, that's the question that the Patriots front office is asking themselves, that's what they're evaluating.
They've won five Super Bowls. I've won zero. They can afford the PI.
Right, right, yeah, totally. So, that's really where I think just looking at the trade deadline in general here, and we'll wrap up, is just, who can they get that can come in and play some serious snaps on the edge?
And I bet you, I bet there's somebody they pay for someone that we didn't think about.
Totally. So when I had this idea, I was like, all right, well, I can throw out all these trade names, but there's no way of knowing who exactly they're going to target or who they're going to go get. And
because that cracks me up when people, like, you know, people say, like, that's rumors are with the Patriots. Like, come on.
Yeah.
The players signing rumors. Come on. Like, no one heard about Gilmore until it happened. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Oh, man, that was one of the craziest mornings. That was one of the craziest things I've ever woken up to in the, you know, 15, 20 years that I've really been following the Patriots closely. That was one of the more crazy ones, is that they offered that much money to Stephon Gilmore on the first day of free agency. You know, that's what we have all the time with Belichick.
Yeah, my jaw dropped. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it really did.
I had guessed wrong. I had guessed that they'd give the money. I think they would give big money to a cornerback. I thought it would be Butler, and I didn't.
Right.
I'm a huge Butler fan. I didn't think he would get 13 million. You know what I'm saying? I didn't think he would get that because he was going to be an RFA. You know what I'm saying? So I thought you could get him as a lesser deal. I was surprised that the Titans were able to find Golden Mines for just $10 million a year, but it is what it is. And I'm like, but I really do think, and we're going to kind of wrap this up, I do think the owners are not spending with the money they should be spending, so but it is what it is.
Right. What do you got coming down the...
Yeah.
What do you got coming down the road here, Miguel? Anything you want to tease?
Oh, yeah, so I write for the Boston Sports Journal. I will, and I do a mailbag every week. I will probably be writing. I'm waiting... How to say this? I'm waiting for something to happen that will cause me to write an article about this podcast. And I was going to write about Harvey Lange, but I'm going to wait for the transaction actually happens, because I don't want, you know what I'm saying? I'm not talk about stuff. I'll write what we just talked about, the thing. I will eventually write about Harvey Lange, blah, blah, blah. I do think there's something that I'm waiting for it to happen on the NFL public page that is going to, that's going to affect a little bit of the salary cap. Eventually, I think during the bye week, I'm only going to write a 2008 salary cap preview. I mean, if you read my weekly incentives thing, I tell you where the pages that I think they're going to be at before any cuts. You know, I think it was the last time I just did it, like $17 million, which is going to round up in cap cap space, blah, 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 which is, you know what I'm saying? But so that's what I do, you know what I'm saying? And I'm waiting, you know, for like every day, every morning, the first thing I do is I look up the NFLPA public page where they have the cap now, and I want to see if the pages change, and then I can just reach out to people and see why it changed.
Right, yeah, I'm sure that everyone that listens to the show is already following you on Twitter, but if they're not, you definitely should follow Miguel on Twitter, because he, like, really makes you smarter and simplifies the very complex NFL salary cap.
Right.
There are a lot of rules. I'm one of the people that researches a lot of these things, and let me tell you, there's a lot of rules and a lot of math that goes into what Miguel does, and it's just not an easy thing to tackle. And I know that since I've, you know, met you over Twitter, I've become a lot smarter about, you know, how salaries move and stuff like that, and trades and whatnot. So definitely go follow Miguel, and Adam and I will be back later in the week to break down the Chargers game on Sunday against the Pats and give some more thoughts about the win over the Falcons as well. But until then, thank you very much, Miguel, for coming on.
Anytime.
And we'll have you on again soon. If there's a trade or something, we'll definitely have you on
in the next
week or two.
Especially if it's Jarvis Landry, because then I'll eat something broke.
If it's Jarvis Landry, then, you're going to hear me screaming all the way from New York City in Boston. But until then, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks again, Miguel. And we'll be back next time, Pats Nation.